You're listening to the Pete and Sebastian Show on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
This is the Pete and Sebastian Show with Pete Corielli and Sebastian Maniscalco.
Petey Biscuit, it's Jimmy from Boston. Petey, trust me. Nobody gives a shit that you're back on the boat again. What the people care about is consistency of the cast and getting that shit up regularly on Friday. But you don't worry about that, because honestly, listen, you go on that boat, any chance you get, you grab that cast that they're throwing at you. Shit, do stand up on the subway if you must. Anything that allows you to afford more than a 27-cent coffee and keeps you out of that goddamn Mickey D's playground. You're better than that, kid. Later.
Hello, honey, it's me. What did you think when you heard me back on the radio? What did the kids say when they knew it was their long-lost daddy-o? Remember how we listened to the radio, and I said, that's the place to be. And how I got the job as an FM jock the day you married me. It was two kids and I was into AM rock, but I just had to run around. It's been 8 years since I left you, babe. Let me tell you about what's gone down. I am the morning DJ at WOLD.
Pete and Sebastian Show.
Wow, what a hiatus.
Back. People don't even understand, man. This is like my first time talking with Sebastian. Pretty much since the last time any of you heard him talk, except for that little 25-minute. We played that little tease from the boat.
There's so much that went on over the last 3 weeks. And first and foremost, got to apologize for the listeners for letting you guys down. Feel so bad. I was looking at some of the tweets and the Facebook messages, people asking if we passed away, if the show is over, and we didn't even give them a like a message or anything to say, hey, hang tight, we'll be back, and just got to send out my condolences.
Yeah, it really kind of snowballed, you know. It was like I was on the boat, and then plus with you, you barely had any free time when you did have it, and then one led to the next. It seemed like every time you turn around, it's fucking Thursday.
I know, man. It creeps up on you.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, never again. We got to figure something out, because I that was just too long with the listeners, and we just got too much momentum and 200 behind us.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, for all I know, you're about to say that they picked up the pilot before the end of Act One, which I can't wait to hear all about this. I got nothing. I haven't spoken to anybody who was there. Are you even in your own home yet? Is the house done?
No, come on, man. That's going to be... When the house is done, I want to do the show the day I get to move into the house. And maybe we'll do a special edition house move-in day. But you will know when the house is done. I am still out of the house. And I haven't even been to my house in about a month.
If you pulled up to your house right now, would they at least give you a look of like, sorry, or hey, God, this is what happened? Or do they just literally go along as if, you know, the foreman of the factory walked in, like, no big deal, it's another day on the job?
There is no... first of all, I don't want to pull up to the house because I don't want to see what stage it's in. Because if I go there and I look at it and by eyeballing it, I don't see progress, I'm going to I didn't want to do it during the shoot because it would have thrown my whole mojo off. So I just stayed away. I might go there today. I don't know. But to answer your question, if I showed up, it would be like the guy showing up that cleans out the bathroom that's sitting outside the garage.
Do they even know you're the homeowner anymore?
I don't think so.
Well, I mean, just to kind of do some funny comparisons, first of all, it's been about a solid 2 years since the renovations have started, is that fair to say?
No. It's been since January of 2015, so we're creeping in on 16 months here.
Okay, I mean, just to put it, it's almost half the time it took to paint the Mona Lisa, I mean the Sistine Chapel, 4 years to do that fucking ceiling.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to bring up is, even if you take it from this point, from the point you made your last hour special, comes out, then you go and you make a deal with NBC. I know you've been dealing with them for a few years, but this last time you go and make a deal with them. Then you pitch, you sell. Then you write it. Then you cast it. Then you film it. And now it's done, okay? All that was done in less time than it's taken them to renovate a home. You've made a television show.
Yeah. Correct.
That's just...
It's
bro, what is going on? It's not even funny anymore. I mean, I don't get it. It's bizarro. I mean, this is just a smooth segue into the beginning of the show, but it is bizarre.
It is bizarre. And what I've done is I completely have blocked it out of my head. And every time the subject comes up, we ran into a contractor friend of ours the other night at dinner, and he started to bring up the house. And I told him, hey, if you don't mind, I don't want to talk about it right now. And he goes, why? What's going on? I go, I don't really want to get into it. And the guy wouldn't leave it alone. You ever tell somebody you don't want to talk about something, but they constantly want to talk about it?
Oh, yeah. It's like, I mean, isn't that the whole point of politely telling you I don't want to talk about it? So just that's it. Move on. But move on, guy.
Yeah, this guy wouldn't let it go. It got so bad, I almost told him, you know, take a walk. Take a walk!
Well, this is scaring me already because I'm hearing these stories and I respect what you're doing. You're clearing your space. You're doing your first TV show and you didn't want any garbage in the way. Mm-hmm. And even like I'd send a text going, good luck, not even a thank you back. Zoned in, not complaining. I get it. Complete shutdown. Now, if you go on to do a dramatic role, I mean, is this going to be one of those things where you're going to like go complete Matthew McConaughey on us?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I can't believe I just referred to McConaughey as a good actor. Wow, the times are changing. Hoo-wee. He was. Dallas Buyers Club. That was unbelievable.
That was fantastic.
Unbelievable. But anyway, man, I respect how you're getting into your space. You don't want anything to get outside of it. So when you go and you're doing your thing, it's a clean canvas. Is that what we're saying?
Clean canvas. There was many people that had sent out some... you know, congratulations, hope all goes well, which I have to, I mean, the backup, the amount of things that I have to catch up on are unbelievable. I mean, the podcast being first and foremost, I wanted to get that out of the way. And then I got to get into, you know, I mean, I'm really good with opening my mail. You should see the mail I got to go through.
Right? When does it get to a point where there's so much that you just send out one mass one to everybody and reboot?
No,
just a reboot.
No, I'm talking about mail. U.S. Postal Service mail.
Oh, ooh, that's fun, though.
Oh, I know. It's like, don't you love a big pile of mail in front of you?
Well, I do with our jobs because, like, all of a sudden I'll get something. The other day, I'm like, what the hell is this? You open it up and it's $800. For the CD you did 3 years ago, playing somewhere in you know, Puerto Rico. I don't know what the fuck it's playing. You know? So we get little, ooh-wee, where'd that come from, you know? If you're just getting your regular mail and shit, you know.
Yeah, you're right. There's always these possibilities of a check coming in from a project you did the way back when. So there's little surprises. So I can't wait to go through the mail. But anyway, first and foremost, and I don't know why I keep saying first and foremost, but I gotta tell you, This was the hardest thing I have ever done in my life.
Yeah, I bet.
It was... You know what? Going into this, in the back of my head, I always questioned, can I do this? Can I act in a sitcom? Although I'm playing myself, can I pull it off? And there was a fear that I had that, you know, I don't know. Maybe not. I don't know. I know I'm confident in my abilities to make people laugh, but in this setting, it's different. It's brand new to me. And I was wondering if I could pull it off. So I was skeptical going in. But, you know, I did my homework. I took my private acting lessons. I got really, really familiar with the script. My biggest concern was memorizing the lines. I was in every scene. There was not a scene I wasn't in except for one quick tag at the end. But I had a lot of dialogue. And in the show, what we did, and I don't know if I told you this. I think you might know. There's these turn to cameras where I'll pop out of a scene and I'll turn to camera while stuff is happening around me. But I'm talking to the camera, but the people in the scene don't know I'm talking to the camera. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, if you watch House of Cards, Spacey does that.
Yeah.
Good things happen to good people.
Yeah.
So it's similar to that where, you know, I'll be in a scene and then boom, I'll pop out. And the first scene happens at a Whole Foods type store. And I kind of go around commenting at the people I see at Whole Foods. So I didn't know if that was going to work. We took it out. We put it back in. All this stuff was going on. We did the table reads, and then the story changed. The lines were changing every day. There was a new scene, then we wrote a 10-page scene, then we took that out and went with the original. So there was just a lot of moving parts. So the last week was, you know, as a cast, we all got together and started working the scenes out and start going through the set. By the way, the sets look fantastic. And Monday morning was the first time all the cast got together to do this on the sets, and we would walk through. And you know, as time went on, it became, you know, comfortable, familiar, started picking up the lines and the nuances of how to do a TV show. I mean, everything from standing in people's light, you know, like when you're doing a scene, you have to situate your body a certain way so there's no shadow on your fellow actor's head, so you're blocking the light. Things that you don't even think about. You know, I didn't think about any of this going in, or where to stand, or how when you turn out of a scene, you open your body towards the audience. You don't turn away from the audience, you know? So.
I was walking
out of a scene like I was, you know, at my house, and they're like, no, when you walk out, you have to walk out this way. So, you know, after hearing that every day, you start to get it drilled into your head. But I got to give my hats off to the cast, a great group of people who, you know, really kind of helped me through the whole process. And the director, Scott Ellis, was really, really great to work with, and Austin Earle, the writer, Greg Garcia, the showrunner. I mean, from top to bottom, I just felt that we had a great group of people to work with. Everybody from the camera people to the grip to the catering to wardrobe, everybody was really nice, and everybody on set was just saying it was just a kind of a joy to be in that type of environment where there was no prima donnas, there was no I need this, I need that. Everybody was just there to make the best show they possibly could, and it was an amazing experience. But I got to tell you, man, that's work. I mean, stand-up comedy, we go out, we do the hour, we go home, we watch Netflix. This is 14, 15-hour days, man.
Yeah.
This is like going to work when the sun is coming up and then coming home when it's dark. This is no joke.
I remember when I did the pilot with Brewer, I was played the buddy, so like I only had a couple of scenes and a couple of sets. But like you, he was in almost everything. And I remember the days would be really long, but when my scenes weren't on, I would just lay on the couch of my set and wait till they got to my set, you know? So I had long breaks.
Yeah.
But the main guy like you, you're going and going. And then when you're done going, then you got to go up to the writer's room and talk about the new lines, right?
Yeah. I was kind of envious of the people that were... I wasn't eating at all. I didn't have any time to eat. I would leave a scene and go to do a wardrobe change, and I would see the Megan, who played the sister-in-law, sitting there like wolfing down a pizza, and I'm like, God, I want to eat. But then I felt if I ate, then I'd have to worry about shit being in my teeth, maybe some residual pizza flying out of my mouth during a scene. So I just locked it down with no food. I had like one burger. This is the day of the show. I had a burger, no bun. I just had a little of that. And brushed my teeth and went back out on set. But man, these people, they would eat in between like scenes.
Yeah, man. Wow, I know. Some of them are so comfortable. It's like you before a comedy show. That's how they are as actors.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, that's the best way I could describe it. Like us being really comfortable before we go on set to do a comedy thing. And these people are just as comfortable before they act. But I mean, when you're acting and there's that cameras there, they're getting it. When you do a comedy club, you go out there and no one's filming it. You don't have to worry about anybody filming it. It was crazy. It was crazy. I can't even explain
I know, right? I want to walk you through it if it makes it easier for you, because I have so many questions. But I guess we got to ask out of the gate. So you're really obviously so excited the way it went, right? Killed.
Proud of it. Really proud of it. I really, truly thought that we captured something that was definitely... first, I think we got the point of view of my comedy in the pilot, which was my major concern, is... I want to stay true to what I do on stage, my point of view, which I think we definitely captured. And then on top of that, the performances we got out of, Tony Danza, Vanessa Lachey, and this guy Steve Talley, Megan Ferguson, the kid Nico. Everybody had really, really funny stuff. I mean, every scene was really funny, man. I mean, I would be the first to tell you that. I didn't feel it, but I felt like if it goes, if it doesn't, I felt like we kind of left it all out on the table.
Well, I mean, so there's no word on the street yet. I mean, you wouldn't want to talk about that now, but that's the most important thing, man. You made what you wanted to make, and you feel great about it.
Yeah, I feel really good about it.
I mean, do you have any word on the street? I mean, that is one of those things where they're leaning over going, get ready, Tuesdays.
No. First, we got to edit. Then we got to send it off to the, the testing audiences to see if they like it. And what happens in these testing rooms is, I guess it happens in Las Vegas, where they literally pull people off the street and they ask them if they want to watch a TV show for $30 and give their opinion on it. So you get just random people. And they do it in Vegas because Vegas is a good cross section of the United States, where they get a bunch of people from, you know, Florida, Texas, New York, and they have like a dial that they have, and when they really like something, that dial moves up. When they don't like it, it moves down. And the whole goal of these testing audiences is to get it where the dial just keeps going up throughout the TV show, so it kind of hits like a climax at the end. So, and then they interview the people and they ask them what they thought. They'll say, "What'd you think of Sebastian?" And then people will go, "I didn't think he was that funny." Now, my question to you is, I could be a part of this where I see it happening from LA live. Like, they videotape it and they stream it live from Las Vegas to LA, right?
Uh-huh.
And you could either watch this or you could get the feedback through the showrunner who has to watch it. So the showrunner would come back and say, oh, Sebastian, you know, certain people didn't like you, and some people liked you, or they like this, they like that. Would you rather see the person ripping you to shreds live streaming, or would you rather get the information from a third party?
Well, keep in mind, you may be looking at the person going, get his address, send him a fruit basket. I love those words. Like, you know, they could love it across the board.
Yeah.
But no, I would definitely watch it yourself. You make your own decisions with you and Lana, what you feel about it, and, you know, and then just hear what they have to say. But, you know, the last thing you need is some yo-yo they pulled off the street for the free food fucking telling you how to act. I mean, Jesus. I just, when does it end? When do you just put the shit on the air? Scott, that's the one thing I remember, and obviously I'm wishing yours is going, man. But the one I did with Brewer, and I'm like, that's it? They just pack it all away? What a waste of money! I mean, shouldn't you play it on something?
No, man, that's amazing. As soon as we said cut and wrap, the sets, everything, they're folding them down. I'm like, can't we leave it up for a couple of days?
I know. And by the way, by you taking it down, it's like scaring me, thinking you already got some word that I didn't hear about. You know? I mean, shouldn't we keep it up? Aren't we coming back here in August? What the fuck?
Oh, God. But my father was there, my mother, Lana, Lana's parents, Lana's brother, and my sister. It was great. It was great to have them all in the audience. We started at 5:30. I think we ended around 11:15, and then we took it back to my dressing room, had a nice little charcuterie plate and some wine, celebrated, and my father came in for 17 hours. This guy's crazy. This guy comes in on a Monday afternoon and leaves on Tuesday afternoon. 24 hours, this guy. And he had to get back home to go back to work.
Oh my goodness, man. Do you go into his shop when you're in town and, you know,
I did.
Like help
him, you know? I went into his shop last time I went to Chicago. This was about a week and a half ago. I surprised him at the salon. And this guy's going to be 70 years old this year, and he's still cutting hair.
Yeah, that is unbelievable, man. What a, you know, it's men like your dad that make us go, you know, just be grateful for everything. So does your dad have a nonstop line, or is it sometimes, like, could business always be better, or is he full-blown always cutting?
I think my dad is at the point now where he would rather, like, I mean, my dad is working because, A, he is not the type that would go golfing or has any, like, hobbies, so he needs to keep himself busy, but on the flip side of that, he also needs to make money. He needs to work, to you know, to, he's redoing his bathroom, he's you know, building a fireplace outside, so he needs money, and he just would want to be at the point in his life where he could go, I'm not gonna go in today, you know.
Yeah. Well, see, that's what I'm saying. So, like, you know, I don't the Kickstarter stuff. I don't even understand that. You just tell people to do it, they do it. I would never. But why don't we do something like, next time you go into Chi-Town, maybe I can fly out there. It's not a far flight from Buffalo. We do the cast at the salon, $50 on top of the regular cut, and you get to sit in, you get the cut, and you listen to the cast live. I'm telling you, man.
Oh, we'll just set up right near the...
Yeah! Hey, look, the black guy's got the black barbershop version. The Italians, we got ours, too. What are you kidding me? Your father, I bet there's times he gets so going, he's got the comb in one hand, the scissors in the other, and he's like, oh, motherfucker, you get me going, right? Waving that shit.
One time Frank Sinatra comes out here and sat down in this chair. And I said, Frank, you hang out with Joe Louis, just between me and you. How old is Joe Louis? You know what Frank told me? He said, hey, Joe Louis, 137 years old. 137 years old.
Oh, man, you ain't never meet no Frank Sinatra.
Fuck you! Fuck you and fuck you!
Who's next?
We'll do the cast right there, man. Lying around the door.
Oh,
then maybe God. Then maybe he can stay till Thursday next time he comes to L.A. Holy shit.
I know.
This man is a workhorse.
We've never done like a live cast. I know the Fighter and the Kid podcast, that's Brandon Schwab and Brian Callen. They actually tour with their podcast.
I can't even get you for an hour.
You should try to cut out some like a weekend where we just try it. I wonder where we have the most listeners. What city?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's probably East Coast, but it's interesting how if you go back, our earlier casts have more downloads because people are finding out about it starting from the beginning because we don't really do current events. And by the way, I haven't mentioned any political talk. I hear you, people. You don't want to hear it anymore. I'm done. I'm done trying. I made my points.
Why do I support Trump? Three words. Good at business.
A message from racists for Donald Trump.
I want to get back to this because I want to ask from the shoot date, okay? So 5 o'clock shoot. What time does everybody show up at the studio? Meaning the cast.
Oh, we were there at 10:45.
Holy shit.
What we did is the day before Monday, all day, we pre-shot all the scenes, or at least 75% of the scenes, in front of no audience. So the reason they do that is if we didn't get it live in front of the audience the next night, we would have like a backup that we could pull
from. Oh, so you don't have to do pickups because you're almost doing the pickups the day before. That's a great idea.
Yeah, so we did that the day before, and then at 10:45 the next day, we did the rest of the pre-shoots. Then we broke for a lunch, and then we got in a room, and we they call it a speed read, where everybody's getting their hair and makeup done, and you just do the lines just so you have them, which any opportunity I got to do the lines, I jumped on it because it was practice for me, because there was chunks that were changed day of that I didn't really have memorized yet. So the more and more I did it, the better I became at it. So, yeah, I just have a problem. Not a problem. It takes me a little bit longer to memorize stuff than other people. I mean, some of these people, they got the script. They look through it. Boom, 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 boom. Yeah, I got it. I'm sitting there going, you got it. I'm sitting over here 8-9 times trying to get this stuff in my head. So,
but you ever like backstage at one of those late night shows where we're going to do 5 minutes, and for whatever reason you start to run the set through your head, and then you get weird, like, wait, what was that? I don't know. And I'll just go, shut it down. You know how it goes, and you'll do it when you're out there. You know, because you know the flow. You know, it's almost like, I don't want to be in a speed read getting my makeup done, and now I can't remember a line. Now you're bugging me out because I can't remember it in a speed read. So it's... Dude, when I texted you the day before, and I go, I'm nervous, and I'm not even there. I just don't know how intense it is. All right, so now you do the pre thing, all right? Now, here's another thing that actors do, which I wasn't familiar with. Gift giving. A lot of times they have gifts for you in the green room before the shoot. Did you have any gifts?
Yes, I did.
Isn't that interesting? You don't get, like, if you're doing a job with another guy before the big presentation, you don't put a little gift basket in Tony's room, going, break a leg, Tony, right? Just go do fucking good. That's why you're getting paid. That's, you already.
Yeah.
So what'd you get? And it's Hollywood sometimes gives like you gave me a goddamn espresso machine.
Well, here, it's interesting. We gave gifts to the cast, and first of all, I got to give props to my wife. I mean, I couldn't have done this without her. She helped me in ways that I never thought possible. She was so such a big part in not only the set design and picking out the different wardrobe and helping me with the gifts. What she did with the gifts was she got cookies made with everybody's face in the cast on the cookie. So what they do is they take a picture that you give them and they superimpose that picture on the cookie. So we had
Wow.
We had the cookie baskets we gave everybody. And then we gave the girls flowers. Two of the girls in there gave them flowers. And I gave the writer and his wife a little gift certificate somewhere. We were chocolates here, cookies there. I got into my dressing room. I got a lot of wine because people know I love wine. So I got that. Judy gave me this thing. Judy, my manager, and your manager as well. I don't know if I've ever told you this story. Did you ever see the movie The Idol Maker?
Why does that sound familiar? I don't know if I've seen it, though. What is it?
It's Taylor Hackford's first movie starring... what the hell is that guy's name? Pantaleone. Is his name Joe Pantaleone? Actor. He was in Sopranos.
Yeah, I know him. He's great.
Yeah, it's about a manager who literally plucks a guy out of obscurity. He's a waiter at a restaurant, and he makes him a star. So Judy had told me that she was watching this movie once, and that was her inspiration to be a manager. She looked at that movie and said, that's the type of manager I want to be. Consequently, I saw that movie and said to myself, that's the manager that I would want to have. And we ended up talking about this about a year and a half ago, saying that was her favorite movie about entertainment. I'm like, that was my favorite movie too. So we have this connection with The Idol Maker.
You got it, Tommy. I saw it in there. You know something? With the right handling, you can go all the way.
So she gave me this framed Idol Maker movie poster, but you know, she transposed. I got a guy that puts my head in different things, and he put my head in the Idol Maker and framed it, and it's cool. I got to show.
That is really cool.
Something,
man,
that you put in your office. So
Judy gives great gifts.
Judy thinks about her gifts. She's really a thoughtful gift giver. So.
That's why people got to understand, man, why people go to Hollywood and they want to act and they want to be stars and be in this. I mean, again, just remembering I got some gifts, which I wasn't expecting, and I get back in the car and you finish filming and now you're going to go and someone's going to treat you for dinner and you got paid well and now you might be on TV and you're like, oh, I don't want this to end. I want more stuff. It's so fucking fun. And then you know, you just want to talk to the guy in charge. You go, dude, we're just going to get better and better and better. You know, it's all very exciting, man. And then when you came out, when you first came out and did your first scene, was this the first time you were actually doing it in front of a live audience other than industry?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. How high was that, man?
It was one of those things where it was almost like a fight. Tony Danza compared it to going out and fighting in front of, an arena of people. So once I was shot out of that cannon right from the first opening scene, I was like, boom, we're off to the races. And the first scene went really, really well. And I'm like, okay, I could do this. People are enjoying it. And going back to the gifts, my mom, it's funny, my mom always gives me these kind of like quirky kind of gifts. She gave me like a trophy with like a star on it. It's something you put in your office and it's engraved, you know, Sebastian Says, and has a nice little message on it. My mom always gives me these gifts where, like, you know, like, and I think this is what parents in general, they give their kids like little trophies. Like, you did it, son. You did it.
My mom always gets me this wood crap, like it'll say it's a piece of wood from a store and it says New York. Like, dude, this is the one she got recently. She mailed to us. It's a wooden thing and it says Starbucks. And it's a Starbucks wooden thing that hangs, and it says, went to Starbucks. So when you're out, you flip it over. So, you know, I know my sister listens, my mom does, and I'm like, what does she think I'm going to do with this thing? And I'm talking to her. I go, oh, thanks for the stuff. And she goes, I know you guys love Starbucks, so I thought it would be so good. Like, whenever you leave the house, you turn it around so people think you're at Starbucks because you're not home. Like, isn't that crazy? Dude, it's something you could paint. It's a piece of wood, and you just fucking paint it green and write Starbucks. And then you, it's like she pays for it at this Michael's, I think it's called. What's the hell that store called? I don't know. One of those tchotchke stores. So you got a trophy? You got a trophy room?
I got a trophy room. It says, Sebastian says, the best is yet to come. And it's a nice little trophy with a star on it.
I meant to ask you, do you have a lot of soccer trophies?
I do.
Yeah,
I still have them.
You do have them.
They're in the basement of my house back in Chicago in a box somewhere in the crawl space.
This is the kind of stuff when the sitcom goes, we got to get that shit and put it in your dad's barber shop, man.
I know.
They go to the Cheers bar in Boston. They're gonna go to your dad's barber shop, man. what do they call them? The exterior shots.
Yeah. When,
are they your dad's barbershop? Wouldn't that be cool? I mean, I'm sorry, his hair salon. I apologize.
No. There is a hair salon in the show. Yeah. No, we don't have any real exteriors. Everything is fabricated.
So it really, even though you start at 5 o'clock, it takes 6 hours and 45 minutes.
Six hours, almost 7 hours to film 22 minutes, because after you do the scene, the director, the showrunner, the writers, they all come on the set and they tell you, okay, that line didn't work, try this line. Or instead of doing that long speech, cut it in half. There's a lot of notes you get, all right? You got to run it again, but you don't want to run it too much because you don't want to wear out the audience.
Yeah, there's a warm-up person that entertains the audience.
Yeah, he was great. He's really good. They play games. They give away money. They feed him pizza. Then they feed him sugar. So, that guy was really, really working his ass off for 7 hours. Got to keep the people entertained in between scenes.
Yeah. Did you do any talking to the crowd?
I came out during the introductions, and I didn't really have anything planned. I just thanked everybody for coming and being a part of it. Thanked the cast and crew and Lana and my wife, and just enjoy yourselves. I didn't want to talk too much. Number one, I was worried about the first scene, and number two, I just wanted to get into it. So, just a little speech, and then at the end they introduced the entire cast, and after that, talked to all my agents and my managers and my family, took pictures of the set.
Did you and Danza exchange gifts?
I gave Danza his cookies. And,
right.
And Danza's gift to me was being a consummate professional. This guy is, God, is he good. He's so good, man.
I bet. I mean, just talk about season. To have a guy like that on board, wow.
Yeah, he was amazing. I mean, he's so good. I'll give you an idea how good he is. He comes in and he opens the door, right? And he has a line. Then he shuts the door and just shuts it. It slams. And then he says his other line. Now, you wouldn't think that that's like anything, but to know not to talk when the door is slamming shut, just things like that, little nuances that a veteran would only know.
When you get your inside the actor's studio with Lipton, you better have a better example than that. Oh my God. Tony knew not to talk over the slamming door. Oh, what a thespian.
I was talking like I had to open up a can of like Sprite or something during the scene, and I opened up the can while the other actor was saying their line. So they're like, Sebastian, and that's all you hear is, and it's like, what the fuck am I doing, man?
Yeah, but if you would have turned around and said, that's what I think of that line. Oh, hey, God. Yeah, I know. That's a little thing, man. Luckily, they got extra Sprite on set. You know what always bothers me when first of all, I was gonna ask if you have any stories from Danza about from old times making those shows. But when I would go to like try and pitch someone with a writer, or if you're ever making a project of any kind with someone who's been around and stuff, when they start telling you a story about a project they did that didn't go, they're telling you a funny story about it, and you're listening to that project going, oh my God, that didn't go? With those guys, there's no way this is, like, the things they've done that didn't go bugs you out. But you can never read these guys. You can't go, like, you know, you want to look at them and go, he's not excited. Does that mean he doesn't care? But they're just so, you know, they know how to play poker face with that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Just do the job and move on, man. Man, you're just, I don't want to jinx it, but it's going, dude. It's just like, and how is Vanessa as far as she felt good about what she did and everything, right? Everyone felt good.
Everybody felt great. You know, there was...
Was Nicky there?
Nick Lachey was there.
Oh, he should have done a song to kick that shit off.
Yeah, we went out to dinner with them Friday night before, last Friday, to get some, you know, like Vanessa wanted to get to know Lana a little bit more because she's kind of playing her and just wanted to kind of go out and get a little couples dinner under our belt. And Nick was there, and he came to the to this taping, and my mother was there. My mother's a huge Nick Lachey fan, so she accosted him. And
that's cool.
It was cool to
so
see.
Cool,
so
bro.
Yeah.
I'm losing my mind when you're not around. It's all because of you.
Tonight I'm going to Minnesota.
Yeah, it was just there, man. Just had some shows. They had a great time. Oh, good town.
How was it? Did you get any good food over there, or any places to hit?
Actually, I had Jackie and Sadie with me, and we were I took them. We purposely went because they put you in a nice hotel called the Radisson Blue, which is connected to the Mall of America, and they got the amusement park. So mm-hmm. I wanted to take her in there, and dude, it's just it was empty and it's clean and it's nice and it's just so funny. I mean, at one point, Sadie literally just stops and screams. She goes, "I'm having so much fun!" It's fucking... I mean, that's everything to a kid. Amusement park? Forget it, dude. So, I was in a coffee shop in the airport recently, and I'm sitting there in a hard chair. Anyway, I'm getting ready to get up. I'm literally just about to pack up. I haven't moved yet, though. And a woman sits down in Minneapolis. They got a big Muslim population, and she sat down next to me with the full garb,
mm-hmm.
right next to me. And now in my head, I'm like, now I got to stay here another 10 minutes so she doesn't think that I'm getting up, because I think that she's going to blow me up, right? But I really just want to get up, man. I just want... I mean, I've done that with African-American people, too, where I've been in a position where I'm like, oh, man, I just wanted to get up, but now they're probably going to think I'm getting off the bench because they sat on the bench. It has nothing to do with... You know what I mean?
Oh, God.
So... But anyway, I miss it. I think I'm opening for Regan. I'm here in Des Moines, Iowa, and we're doing Milwaukee tomorrow, and I'm opening for Milwaukee, and you're there next day. Let me tell you some of these flight situations I've had lately. They're going to blow your mind. Do you have a little time for some fun stories?
Yeah, what do you got?
Okay. I'll do them one at a time for the incidents. But anyway, American Airlines, I know you don't fly it, but just for anyone out there, just be done with it, all right? I literally got an email from a woman who's a flight attendant at American. I can't, no names. I appreciate the email. But, I mean, she broke it down for me. Ever since they bought out U.S. Airways, customer service doesn't matter. Flights are canceled. They don't give a shit. They don't have to give a shit because you need them, because they're sometimes the only place that goes anywhere. But walk before you take American Airlines. All right, dude. So... I was trying to tell you this on the boat, but I get on a plane, right, to go down to Miami. As soon as I get on, you know, the seatbelt. The guy's flicking it. The kid, he's like 20-year-old kid. He's flicking his seatbelt to the music. Like, what do? Do you not think anyone else hears that? So I got a dude to lean over, and I go, enough. And he goes, what? I go, what are you, in the band? Enough with the flicking to the music. So, that's one. Same flight, yeah.
So what's the response on that? Does he stop?
Yeah, he stops, but he gives a stunned look. But luckily, there was a woman right next to me who goes, thank you. And she said it loud enough for him to hear.
Oh, yeah.
These are the little fights I do for the people all the time. It's unbelievable, man. So, like, by the way, the flight attendant gets on. He does one of these when we land. Our pilot can't hear us right now, and it's his birthday, and we're having a party for him back at the hotel, but he doesn't know we're having a party yet. So when you come off, it would be so funny if you say, enjoy the party, because he won't know what you're talking about. Dude. I am not kidding you. I think I was the only one who didn't say enjoy the party to the pilot.
Oh, God.
I don't understand people who would do that. I'm literally supposed to look at the guy and go, enjoy the party. What the fuck?
First of all, I am concerned that the pilot can't hear the announcement. Like, God forbid, if something was happening in the plane and they did an announcement, you're telling me the pilot can't hear that?
No, they can set it. So, like, when the flight attendants come on and tell you all the safety stuff, the pilots don't have to hear that shit. So they have a way of doing it so that only the cabin can be heard. So that's what the flight attendant put on.
But what I'm saying is, you're telling me the pilot can't hear through the door what's going on?
I guess not. No, it's a heavy door, man. I mean, pretty much within a few minutes, he realized everyone knows that there's something that's his birthday. But the point is, it's like, who's that nice?
Yeah, I know the point is, like I, anytime anybody tells me, never, you know, hey, say something or do that, I never do it. I never do it. I mean, like, I was on a plane once where everybody, it was Southwest, where they were doing stretching exercises, where the pilot, I know the flight attendant comes on and says, I know everybody's been sitting for a while and everybody's probably tired a little bit, so I'm going to do some stretching with you guys. So if you want to put your hands up in the air, put them up in the air, and lean to the left, and the whole plane is doing this. And I'm sitting there, I'm the only guy not with his hands up. I go, why are you doing this?
That's crazy, man. I mean, where do people grow up? Where I grew up, everyone would go, guy, what the fuck are you doing? No one's doing that shit with you.
Even like, when you go on the boat, don't they do a thing where you gotta wear the vest and go to the safety meetings? Just in case anything happens on the boat?
Yeah, not me, but the passengers, yes, I love it. It's for an hour. I can get anywhere on the boat for an hour without those slugs. Because I know they're all in one big room with big, dumb, orange things. By the way, you can't get helicopters out here quick enough that I got to get wet? What the fuck? We're American, man. I shouldn't even get wet. Right? I'm going to be floating? What is this, 1842? Make a phone call. I could get my buddy down here. Really, I could probably call you and say, tell your mother, tell one of her rich friends, your mother-in-law, to get a boat off of Bermuda. I'm sinking off the coast of Puerto Rico. I'll get my own flight out of Marco Island later, but I could, I mean, shit.
Yeah, in this day and age, nobody should be floating.
Yeah, but you gotta go, yeah, so passengers, apparently they say they check the cabins.
Yeah, I don't want to do that. Like, I don't want to do those things. When they say, oh, we got to do a safety meeting, I'd rather say, you know what? All right, if it goes down, I'll figure it out. Right? Like, how many people are even paying attention in these safety meetings?
None, man. It's like, come on. If the I would like to think the boat is at least going to go down slow enough that somebody could explain to me how to put my life preserver on. I think we got enough time for that. Right?
Oh, God.
Yeah. Those, the boats, man. I am, You know, I'm a little too isolated. I so bad don't go anywhere or do anything. It's like prison for me, man. I go right back to that room. I write. I pace. All I do is I go work out. When I go work out, there's like, you know, 40 different nationalities in the gym because I go to the crew gym. I mean, dude, I'm like doing hard time. Came away with a lot of jokes, though. I really, right. So if anyone comes see me, I got a lot of new stuff. But anyway, bro, so then this is what, now the plane takes off. And you ever have this when these families, and I know, I guess it happens sometimes, but whenever I see it with families, I always equate it with like white trash, I'm sorry. When the whole family can't sit together, like one kid's over here, the mother's in the back, the father's up in the right hand corner by the window, you know, and they're all, and they communicate, dad, you got the magazine? Like, what are you in a fucking station wagon? Wait till we level out and then walk up. Jesus Christ. Right? So I got a kid behind me and a mother in front of me. The kid's like, I swear to God, the kid's like 19 years old, right? And he goes, Ma, I don't want my gum anymore. This is what he does, bro. He puts his arm between my seat and the woman next to me with his gum in his fingers because she's in the seat. So now the mom, she's looking through the crack back through, but she won't take the gum. And she yells to the husband who's across the aisle, he's giving me his gum. I don't want your gum. I don't want your gum. And he's like, well, I don't want it. So luckily, again, the lady next to me, she goes, well, we don't want it. So then the mother reaches over and she takes the gum from him. I mean, what are we raising? I tell my daughter, swallow that shit. Get to it. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I don't know. Why do we got to know everybody's business on the plane? When Lana and I are in a plane, we talk so soft that nobody else could hear what we're talking about. Nobody, even the guy next to me, even if he wanted to hear me, I got it down to a science where I got a voice that only my wife could hear.
Yeah, that right? Low.
That low. It's like low, man. These families are throwing shit across the plane. I hate when people get separated and they're in my row. And the guy or the girl gotta come in my row. I'm sitting on the aisle, and the person they need to talk to is at the window, and I gotta sit and I gotta look at the guy's crotch while he's talking to his wife. Get the fuck in the bag.
Yeah. Well, what about this one? Same thing. When this last flight, which never happens, I had the window. Oh, God, what is this, a ride? Everybody's looking across my face out my window. I shut the fucking window down. Ride's over. Go back to your magazines. Nothing to see here. Shh, ridiculous. You know, because then you turn around and they make eye contact with you. Face down.
Oh, I know. I don't understand. What the hell are they looking out the window to begin with? It's like we're 35,000 feet up. Now you know that they're looking at you, right? Because you're staring straight ahead. So in your head, you go, these people looking out the window? Now, when you close the window, do you just close it without even looking at the shade? How do you close it? If somebody's looking out the window, how do you close it? Are you looking straight ahead and you just shut it down?
I'll shut it down. The only time I'll acknowledge everybody is if I want to open it, because I know that sun can be brutal on some people. So I'll say, do you mind if I want to open it? But if I want to shut it down, that's me, baby. I'm in charge of the window. Am I going to ask you?
Okay. Now.
It's a fucking cloud. What, you born yesterday? Go back to your book. I'll let you know if a bird comes by or something worth seeing. What's with these drones, too, dude? Why don't we just make them illegal? What grown man needs to fly a fucking toy over the airport? What is going on with that? Right? I mean, Jesus Christ. I need to do my little drone, you weird wacko.
I know. I don't know. Do you have any interest in doing that with a little camera and getting an aerial shot of your house?
No, I mean, is that what they're doing? They want to see what their house looks like from above?
I don't know what they're doing. I mean, like, sometimes they do it real estate. They take a kind of a 360-degree look at the home and the backyard from above. But I'm talking about a guy who's doing it for recreational, like, fun.
Yeah.
It's like if you ever came home with a drone, wouldn't Jackie just file for divorce?
Yeah, she'd be like, what are you, 10? I mean, this is ridiculous. I mean, come on, dude. Someone's going to die. I'm going to die going to a gig because some yuppie's flying a drone over JFK or something?
Yeah.
Also, dude, I got to fly out to Miami. I'm supposed to have 2 flights. I land at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm going to watch some NCAA basketball. What happens? My flight gets canceled, not because of weather, because American Airlines can't get the crew. Now I'm on 3 planes. I don't get in till 10 o'clock at night. They lose my bag. So I go up to the counter, and I want to tell people out there, you got to save that pink ticket. You know, I used to, like, throw that out when I check my bag. Like, whatever. It'll be there.
The ticket you get when you check your bags in.
Yeah.
So you could, if they get lost, they could track it.
Yeah, in the past, I've, like, when I'm done flying, when I get on the plane, I'll take my boarding ticket, and I've taken those, and I've just thrown them out, like, ah, we're cool, we're on. But, you know, thank God I didn't do that this time, because when I landed, they didn't have my bag. The guy in front of me didn't have his tag. He's trying to describe his bag to the lady at Miami International. A bag that could be anywhere. He's like, it's black with zippers. I'm like, guy, it's fucking lost. What, are you kidding me? So they scan mine. They tell me it's in Pittsburgh. Guys, are you going to Pittsburgh? I'm like, yeah, I go from Buffalo to Miami to Pittsburgh. That's what I do, man. So, and my passport's in it. So they go, we think it's coming in on a flight at 1 a.m.
Wait a minute. Your passport, you checked in the bag?
Absolute amateur hour.
Amateur hour at its finest.
I got to the gate. My bag was coming with me, and then I got to the gate, and they said, listen, we'll check it to your final destination. I forgot to pull out my passport. I couldn't believe it.
Okay.
So I wait till 1 o'clock. And by the way, I go up to the ticket counter to argue about my bag. And right away, I go, you know, you put me on 3 flights. I'm in 6 hours later I'm supposed to be. And the guy does one. He's just like, sir, if you want me to help you, you should calm down. Are you going to calm down? And as he said, are you going to calm down? I just fucking look right at him. I don't make a sound. And I just give him a glare. And I won't, dude, that's a new move. I don't move at all. I don't say a word. And he goes, are you going to calm down?
And you don't say nothing.
I'm staring. I'm not moving. People behind me are freaking out. They're like, this is weird. Sir, are you going to calm down? And now I'm committed. I'm like, this is freaking everybody. Just staring at him. Sir, I need to know if you are going to calm down. And I still don't respond. And finally he breaks and he's like, I'm going to go into the back and I will come out and I will see about your bag. And they always got to do that, right? They got to go to the back. And then as he starts walking to the back, then I yell out, yeah, go talk to the wizard. Go talk to the wizard. Excuse me, sir. Yeah, you always got to go. Got to go behind the curtain and see what the wizard says. I'll wait here. Why doesn't the wizard come out? Bring him out. And everyone behind me is on my bed. They were with me, dude. It was a nightmare at Miami. So then the guy comes back out and he goes, we can have it on the next flight out and we'll land at 1 o'clock. Is that good enough for you? That's what he said. Like, yeah, what do you got? Unless you got a rocket ship, I guess I got no choice. So, you know, then 1 o'clock in the morning, there's my bag. And again, there's 8 hours of your time. You're never getting back.
Now, and I'm a little confused because you said you got a letter from the flight attendant. Am I right in saying that?
Yes.
Is this that story?
Well, oh, no. I was saying last cast, when you weren't able to cast,
yeah,
we played that 25 minutes, and I just said, like a 10-minute up front, I said, when I get back with Sebastian, I got some American Airlines stories. What a nightmare. You don't ever want to fly that. I'll tell you later. So then she emailed me and said, I work for American. I can't wait to hear your stories.
Oh,
it's a nightmare.
Okay. Dude, okay. I'm sorry.
So that's, listen, now that's not even it. Coming back after 2 weeks now on the boat, coming back from Miami, the way the boat sets it up, it's so annoying. You're at the airport at noon, but they won't book you till after 5. So I have a 5 o'clock flight. I got to sit at the airport for 5 hours. Again, American Airlines. They come on. They're fixing the plane. It's a minor technicality. We'll be going at 6. Okay, 6 o'clock comes around. We'll be going at 6:30. They come on at 6:30. We'll be going at 8. They come on at 8. We'll be going at 8:30. That's when I finally go, are we going or are we not going? Again, bro, I got a connecting flight. I haven't been home in 2 weeks, and now I'm sitting at the airport from noon. It's 8:30 at night. I'm fucking... And I'm like, are we going or are we not going? And then the guy keeps trying to talk over me, and I just keep going louder. Are we going or are we not going? Sir, are we going? And then finally, I stop, and he goes, listen, I know you all want to be placated right now, but the truth is, and dude, I didn't even have to say anything. This big Irish guy jumps up off his seat, and he runs over, and he leans over, and he goes, fucking placated? You better think of a different term to use than placated to us, pal. You understand? We've been sitting here for 5 hours. Nobody's being placated right now. I'm like, oh, yeah, I got them all riled up now. Like a whip, I just smack them in the ass collectively like a team. We're churning. We're churning now. So they go, we have to wait longer. What we're going to do in exchange? And then I yell out, oh, are we getting the snack bag now? Are we getting the chips? Oh, all right, give us the Doritos. We're even. Kids are on the floor. Kids are on the floor. I love, dude, when there's kids there, even if they're not yours, it's a gold mine. You know what I'm saying? It's not even about us. It's about the kids. Meanwhile, the white trash kid was on the floor at 4:30 when we all thought the plane was still taking off on time. What is with the floor with people? Get the fucking kids off the floor.
I don't know,
it's disgusting.
Man. Yeah, now first you were bothered at 4:30 with the kid on the floor. Now you're using him to make a point.
Yeah, exactly, man, right? So then, finally, 11 o'clock at night, a plane comes around. They go, we have a plane. And then people clap, which I don't do that clap.
Oh, God.
Why are you clapping now? You're making them think now everything is cool. It's not even close to cool. I got to land in Charlotte, and I have a layover now in Charlotte. Bro, I was supposed to be home at 8 o'clock at night. Now it's 11 o'clock at night, and I know when I land in Charlotte, they already told me, when you land in Charlotte, there'll be somebody right there to give you your airport voucher to take the shuttle to the hotel, and your room is waiting for you, and we have you on the first flight out in the morning. I have no toiletries because it's all my check luggage. And this is what you do, right? So then you get off the plane, and it's late at night, and we're all there, and we're all getting our vouchers, and like there's like 50 of us. And we've been sitting there together all day, and now we're all going to the same hotel like a family. Ew.
Oh,
you know?
God, like a big group?
Yeah, like a big group, and you're all wheeling your stuff through, and you know, everyone's on the phone with family going, I'll never fly American again. Yeah, until the fucking next time. You know? the whole thing. And one girl crying on the phone going, Ma, it's my fault, Ma. Yeah, Ma, it's my fault. It's my fault the plane's not going. Like, you know, just frustrated. She was like a college girl, I could tell. And I bring her up because then we all get outside. And then they call the airport. They call the hotel shuttle. It's a van. It's going to come get us. Someone turns around and says, the van's coming, but there's only one van. It's going to take like 4 trips. It's 1 o'clock in the morning.
God.
1 o'clock in the morning, man. I'm laughing now, bro. I was fucking... I haven't seen my daughter in 16 days. I have no internet, so I haven't really seen her at all. You know that. You've spoken to her or anything. So, now we're waiting for the shuttle, and I figure, well, the hotel's got to be near the airport if they have a shuttle. So I go over to a cab. And I get in a cab, and I go, dude, just take me to this hotel. So he's like, no problem. It's only like $10. And I was this close to turning around and just grabbing the college girl and going, listen, get in my cab. It's on me. You'll get in first to your hotel room. This way you're going to be here for 45 minutes. And I didn't. I regretted that as the cab pulled away. You think she would have got in with me? You think she would have been freaked out?
You would have been arrested.
What, she was about 19 years old. She saw that I was with her all day. She saw me screaming and yelling all day. She knew I was one of them. I'd be like, listen, don't wait on a shuttle. Come with me. I got the cab. We're going to the hotel.
You can't do that anymore. I know your heart's in the right place, but you take a stranger in the cab, and it's forget it.
That's too bad. It's too bad. It's come to that, right?
I know.
So I get to the hotel. The lady right there is great. Gives me my key. I go up to my room. I got some food. I sit down. I take a shower. I finish my food. I brush my teeth. I'm laying in bed. And then I hear people coming down the hallway. And I'm like, Suckers, for $10, you could have already had a hot shower and a dinner, but you waited for the shuttle. For $10.
For $10.
If you're ever in that situation, people, boom. So then, get back the next day, get on the plane, finally land in Buffalo, dude. Now, right before we land, the pilot gets on and says, if you have to go to the bathroom, go now. Then the flight attendant gets on and goes into I am not kidding you, man, the longest one yet, about 4 to 5 minute speech about some stupid American Airlines card and the miles you get for free if you sign up. And we'll be coming down with, dude, I'm so pissed. I've had so much of enough. I fucking rip up the buckle, slam my seat, like, because there's no one next to me, slam the buckle. I walk really fast up the aisle. Everyone's like, what the fuck? And I lean over into that little area right in front of the cockpit door. And just to the left, there's the little guy scurried over talking into the phone. And you get 40,000 free miles. And I lean over and I go, a commercial? You're doing a commercial? Most of us were supposed to be home yesterday, and you're doing a commercial. And the other guy leans over and goes, sir, we have to. Oh, yeah, you have to. All right. And I go and I sit back down. As I go sit down, I go, fucking commercial.
Man.
And then I sit down. He comes down the aisle with the little stupid flyer to sign up. And as soon as he passes me, I go, no bites, huh? No bites?
I'm telling you, man, you're pressing it. I'm surprised you haven't had any authorities waiting for you when you land.
No, it's a skill I've had my whole life. Even making fun of the big guy in school, I knew just how to press far enough and then back off without getting beat up. And with this, like, they had a big thing in the news the other day. Some lady was going hog wild because her flight was delayed and she wanted to get to Disney World. And she said it's a trip of a lifetime, which right there, oh, my God, why don't you just have a banner in your hand saying white trash? Trip of a lifetime? A Disney cruise? Not even Disney. The boat. I've seen that boat. I can't even believe that goddamn... Oh, my God, I'm referencing other ships. Oh, shit. Anyway, dude, in closing... Her thing was the whole airport was closed down. It was windy day. They shut that. You, when it's weather, you got nothing. But when it's mechanical or crew, then you lay into them, man. You lay into them. So anyway, dude, let the sitcom get picked up. I'll just open for you and we'll fly private. All right? Can you do me that?
Oh, God. Oh, man. So
oh, by the way, I flew with Jackie, came, you know, to Minneapolis with Sadie. And she gets so, you know, Jackie's been everywhere from Africa. She's been places. So she gets really snippet if I try to tell her how to travel in any capacity. Yeah. Like, come this way or do that. She's always like, hey, I know how to travel. I don't need you, right? So, you know, I try not to do that because I know she'll snap at me. So, you know, when you get up to the podium, when they want to see your ticket and your license before you can then go through and start security.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, then you can actually, I'm sorry, go to the metal detectors and whatnot.
Yeah.
So, you know how they usually have that plastic flap about waist high? And when you're next, you're supposed to. So Jackie's holding the flap open. So I said, you got to close the flap. So I don't have to close the flap. And so I go, you got to close. So finally she closes the flap. And she's like, what's your deal with da-da-da? And I'm trying to tell her, I go, you keep the flap open, the guy's going to say, close the flap, miss. Don't be that person. So then we go through security. We get through. Now they got to check her bag. She doesn't know why. I don't know why. Oh, dude, they pull out a bottle of water.
Oh, an amateur move.
Not only that, but she didn't even know she had it in there until the guy held it up. Not even one of those, oh, right, I have water. No, just, oh, yeah. I go, oh, God, I got to bring this up on the cast, man. I go, who does the water? You may as well have a fucking handgun. I mean, Jesus.
Oh, God. Now, do you think you're a better traveler than your wife?
Oh, absolutely. I'm sorry, I am, man. I'm like, forget it, man. I mean, I could literally go to Colombia and come back with 6 kilos. No, I am. I'm a better traveler.
Lana's terrible. I mean, late, going to the airport, getting into that security line. Like, my wife will talk at the most unopportune times. Like, when you're putting the bag up to get it scanned through security, my wife will turn to me and start like a discussion
about that, you know, it could be so not even about what's happening at the moment. She'll turn, she goes, you know, our house, if we get it done by July, we should have a... I go, put the bag up on the thing and take your shoes off.
Yeah.
Why are we talking about this now? So last night we went out to dinner with her parents and we took an Uber to the restaurant. I'm in the front, her parents are in the back, and she's in the back. My wife got like nauseous in the back because the Uber driver was heavy on the brake. And my wife said, can we take off the headrest so she could see outside so she wasn't so nauseous? And right away I'm going, take the headrest off? What? So, you know, like I would rather throw up in my lap than say, take the headrest off, right?
Yeah. And the Uber driver's thinking, what we could do is just prorate it and get out here. Take the headrest.
Take the headrest.
Now, how do you entertain that?
Well, no, I said, oh, this is an episode. You know, because like anytime something comes up, I'll say, we got to write this into an episode. And she barked back. She wasn't having any of that. She's like, I'm claustrophobic, man. I'm hot. So she's taking her jacket off. Now I'm sitting in the front seat and I got to throw my hands behind me and try and take the headrest off. And I'm thinking, the whole time I'm thinking, that's it. We're getting one star from the Uber driver and we're not going to be allowed to take Uber anymore.
Yeah, right? Because, I mean, it's the guy's regular car anyway, right?
Yeah, and I could see him after we get out saying one star and for the reason, wanted to take car apart during the trip. You know, it's like, come on, headrest. I never even heard of that.
No, I hear you, man. It's interesting how people, you know, when they travel, what they need, how they are. And, oh, man. My daughter, forget it. She don't make a peep. Jackie, too, man. They're really great. My family travels with class. They really do. They really do.
Living from day to day.
Listen, man, whether you're golf's biggest fan or you're just ready to try a new fantasy sport, you can play 1 week fantasy golf for free every week at DraftKings.com. Just pick six golfers before tournament tees off, stay under the salary cap, and rack up the points for streaks, per hole, performance, tournament finishes, and more. Outscore the competition and you could win, baby. Only DraftKings brings the excitement of golf to this level. Holy shit, does anyone bring golf's excitement to that level? DraftKings.com does. With every monster drive and every made putt bringing you closer to victory, and DraftKings offers more than fantasy golf. Choose from a variety of sports to showcase your winning skills, like baseball, soccer, and even mixed martial arts, man. DraftKings.com, you bet on all of this shit. Millions of sports fans just like you have already discovered DraftKings. Now it's your turn to get in on the action for free. This isn't fantasy as usual. This is DraftKings. Fantasy golf contests begin when tournaments tee off, so hurry to DraftKings.com now to choose your golfers and be sure to use promo code LINEMEN, LINEMEN. To play for free. That's promo code LINEMAN to play for free now. Only at DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com. Later.
Been a hell of a fun show, man.
Yeah,
oh, dude.
Good to be up and running again.
I got an email. I got to get his last name, but I got an email from a guy, a couple of them, man. We've been going back and forth. A guy named Bobby. He plays for the Buffalo Bisons, AAA. He's one level away from the Blue Jays, man. Big fan of the cast. Great guy. He invited me out to Buffalo Bison Stadium. When you play in Buffalo, you'll see it. It's a beautiful stadium in downtown.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do a little BP with the team on the field.
Really?
Yeah. And then I said I can even go up and do some of the in-booth announcing for the radio with the radio guys. They said they'd have me up there and do that if I wanted to.
Wow.
I said, wow, man, I really appreciate it. I totally look forward to it. Thanks. And he goes, all right, man, I'm glad you do. My wife thought it might be a little bouncy to ask you to do those things. I go, bro, you got me doing everything but singing the national anthem. So I'm looking forward to that, baby. One level away. Nice. Oh, and lastly, me and my neighbor, I got two about 80-foot tall trees in my backyard. And my neighbor wanted them down because he's doing a garden and they take away his sunlight. Now, I actually want these trees down anyway, but I was going to wait maybe a few years to pay the guy to come take them down. So my neighbor says, hey, if you're cool with taking these trees down, my other neighbor's named Ed. He goes, Ed said you might be cool with taking these trees down. I can take them down with you. They can land in my backyard, and we'll cut them up when we can. So I said, all right. So the other day we went out there to scope it out. We're cutting them down Thursday. And if they don't fall right, they're going to fall on my garage or my neighbor's house. And they're leaning that way. And this guy's going, nah, I'm going to climb up the tree. And we're going to get a rope around it. And then we'll get some guys, your father-in-law, me, Ed. And as I cut it, the way I'm going to cut it, it's going to lean towards us. We're going to put a wedge in there. And then we have to pull the rope. And then as this tree comes down, we got to dive out of the way. Jesus, I don't know about this, dude. I'm filming it. And this is small town, too. This is like small town living. Because then he goes, what do you want to do with the wood? And I go, well, listen, there's one of three things. Either if you want it, fine. If my father-in-law wants it, fine. If not, I'm just going to keep cutting it up and taking it to the dump. I don't want it. And he goes, well, if we cut them 8 feet long, the trunks, and then we bring them to blah, 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 they use these to make posts so we can get money for the posts if you want. He's talking like $150. I'm going to put these giant tree trunks in a fucking thing and take them 45 minutes up a hill. I mean, what am I going to do? To get grain for my cows? Jesus. I'm cool with the posts, man, if you want them. Well, I'll take that one. That one's cherry wood, so I'll take that one. That's good wood. And now I'm thinking, should I give him the cherry wood? What the fuck? What do they do with cherry wood? So,
I'm bothered that the guy wants the trees down because it blocks the sunlight. I'm bothered by that.
Well, truth be told, I showed my cards too soon because my other neighbor, Ed, came to me and he goes, hey, Chris was asking about taking those two trees down because they blocked the sun for his garden. And, you know, that one is starting to hang towards my house. And I was wondering how you felt about it. And right away, I go, oh, my God. I was thinking about getting them cut down. Yeah, why? What are you thinking, man? Because I really did want them cut down. But I should have been more like, you guys are asking me to cut down my trees.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Now you got, like... Now you made it sound like you're going to do it anyway. You don't have any leverage just in case you need something from them later on, man. You got to act like this is a problem.
There's another tree about 4 feet. I should have did that, bro, and I didn't play it right. I'm going to moving forward because that's what Jackie said. She's like, guy, don't forget, you're cutting down the trees for his fucking garden. You're doing him a favor at the end of the day. So, yeah, the trees can fall in his yard, whatever. So then there's another tree about 5 feet over. On my neighbor's property. Now, my neighbor's rent, and the guy who owns it never comes around. I really don't like the guy. He doesn't take care of the place.
Yeah.
So this guy goes, man, I'd love to take that tree down too. So I go, fuck it, dude. Let's just cut it down. It's about 100 feet high oak tree, right? And he goes, well, we got to ask Dan. I go, yeah, fucking Dan won't even know. Let's cut the tree down. So Jackie's like, you're not cutting the tree down, Pete. If he's going to find you, don't cut another man's tree down. And I'm like, he's going to say no if you ask him. But if you don't ask him, he won't even know you cut it down.
Yeah, just cut the damn thing.
So Jackie's trying to talk me out of cutting any of these things down. She thinks it's too dangerous. So anyway, if I can't cast next week, it's because I'm under a limb.
Sounds like a country song.
What do you got, bro? You plugging it up or what?
What do I got, man? I got Minnesota Friday night at the Pantages Theater, and then two shows in Milwaukee at the Pabst Theater Saturday night, and then I'll be in Las Vegas, Nevada at the Mirage Hotel next weekend. So if you're in Las Vegas, stop by the Mirage and say hello. What about you? What do you got?
Nice. Well, right now I'm doing the little Regan run, so we end up the last one is Sunday in Peoria, Illinois. Do you think this is weird? I'm thinking about seeing if I can find where Pryor grew up, checking out the house.
Yeah, go by, do a little research.
Yeah, why not, right? I don't know. Is that weird? Maybe not. But anyway, next week I'll be, anyone in Ohio, man, a place called Austintown, Ohio. I'm doing a little intimate club called Comedy Club at Mojo's. Two Friday, two Saturday. I know some people got tickets already. Looking forward to seeing you. Anyone in that area, it's Austintown, Ohio, man. Go to my website. It's going to be fun shows. Week after that, I will be at Bananas in Hasbro Heights, New Jersey. And then taking a couple weeks off to get this roof done. And then you just go to PeteCorielli.com and you'll see all the upcoming shows.
There you have it, people. Good to be back up on the horse again. We again apologize for the lack of commitment that we've had. It's primarily my fault due to some TV show and whatever. We're sorry.
Whatever what, dude? You were doing a sitcom. It's just glad to be back. Great hanging. We're back on course now, or what?
We're back on course, man. We're full steam ahead.
All right, bro. All right, great hanging, man.
Take care.
Later.
Bye.
The show has ended.
I mean, where do people grow up? Where I grew up, everyone would go, guy, what the fuck are you doing? No one's doing that shit with you.